Cape Talk. Health and wellness.
As I mentioned, today we're taking a closer look at the state of psychiatry in South Africa. From the Life Esidimeni disaster to the recent events at Tower Hospital in the Eastern Cape to reports of massive undercapacity, particularly in the public service, there are a lot of red flags going up and waving furiously. And to chat to us about some of the key challenges the profession and its patients face, I'm delighted to welcome in studio with us Professor Bernard Janssen van Rensburg, who is the president of the South African Society of Psychiatrists. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Papa. Thank you for the invitation.
The issue of South Africans' mental health has been thrust into the spotlight by a number of tragedies in the last couple of years. Obviously, Life Esidimeni being one of them. For us in Cape Town, the suicide of Professor Mongani Moyosi at UCT also serving as a sort of a catalyst for more conversation. And what we are hearing in those conversations is alarming, because we're hearing the stat that as many as one in three South Africans may be grappling with a mental condition. Is that an accurate figure?
You're absolutely right that mental health has really become so prominent, so much more than we would have imagined a little while ago. Yes, I would agree with that type of statement. It's really the case that we've seen how a condition like major depression has creeped up to on the priority list of public mental health issues in many countries, the top 10, even the top 5 really? Of public mental health issues. Countrywide and not just in this country.
Okay, so this is a worldwide yes. phenomenon, not just a South African one, although we know there are many factors playing into the stress and the conditions we live in South Africa that explain why it is so. The big question is spending and the allocation of resources keeping up with that that reality?
I think that is the one of the core questions. and one of the resource types that you've already alluded to is the human resources. And speaking for the Society of Psychiatrists, perhaps, yes, we're a specialist, a medical specialist group, which means we are by no means the only category of health worker involved in mental health. And we are in close relationship on a daily basis, on a clinical level, with a multidisciplinary team group of disciplines, which would include nursing, psychologists, social workers, occupational therapists, and so forth. So then one must also look at different levels of service. So-called primary healthcare has been mooted to be the mainstay, the cornerstone of the health service in this country and others. And so also to look what mental health care would translate into and what categories of workers may be required there. From a medical perspective, one will obviously think of your general practitioner, your family doctor, who we do know really they took a bulk of mental health complaints and problems presenting on a primary care level. So what I would say in having to speak about specialists in the field, that yes, the psychiatry group is one of several categories of mental health care workers.
It's an important one, though, and it's one that is understocked, if I can put it that way. I mean, what sort of figures? When I did some research, I came across studies from about 8 or 9 years ago, which said that there was one psychiatrist for every 110,000 people in the Western Cape. Mm-hmm. It was up to 1 per 5 million in the Northwest. Have the figures changed at all since then?
Unfortunately not. I think those figures proportionally are still as bad as you're saying. And what may be true, though, is more urban-orientated provinces like Western Cape and Gauteng may have physically more numbers of psychiatrists. But, for example, on the east end, the Ekurhuleni district of Gauteng literally has one psychiatrist in public sector for 3 million people. Similar type of ratio also for the Western, the West Rand. So even in Gauteng, which is also an urban orientated province, we do see that the actual number of psychiatrists in particular, in my view, is not adequate. And we seemingly do not keep up with the population growth.
Life Esidimeni happened in an urban province.
Absolutely.
And not to say that was the fault of a psychiatrist by any means, but is the problem that there are just too many cases to monitor, too many cases to watch, and not enough people to be that watchful eye over every one of them?
I think that is a very important point as well. In Gauteng, yes, we arguably they are almost the best resourced in let's say relatively speaking, but it could talk to the to just the lack of speaking up, the lack of reporting of problems in other provinces. I think that that is more likely to be the case than to say there aren't problems in the other provinces.
We've had a recent example of the Tower Hospital in the Eastern Cape where there were reports of major problems. A team went in, assessed, a report came out that was the findings were, I think, problematic, we can say. It didn't find evidence of the kind of level of patient neglect and abuse that was described by the original whistleblower, but it did concede and speak to massive failures of hospital management and function, didn't it?
I think that's also a true statement, which I can strongly support, in the sense if you do look at the ombuds report on that facility, it's clearly that even in his titling of the report, you may know that he's used a subtext on the pages of his report, referring to the problem as Tower. My name, the problem, so-called, is Tower Hospital, but my surname or my Isiduku, which is a clan name, from Xhosa, from isiXhosa, is the Eastern Cape Department of Health, which seems to indicate already that although Tower Hospital, as he put it also in the report, the whistleblower was the so-called necessary lightning rod to point towards the bigger problems, which in fact has been confirmed in that report to be in Tower Hospital management, but to the extent that Ombud has had recommended the appointment of an administrator to actually administrate the Eastern Cape mental health care services. So I would also agree with you that that seems to be a major indication that it is not just perhaps some of the problems that he's alluded to, the way that the whistleblowing has been done, but that the actual whistleblowing did result in findings that he was able to include in his report.
Okay, now, we've spoken about the fact that there are simply not enough psychiatrists per se. What about the existence of psychiatric institutions and hospitals? Yeah. We've spoken about one or two specific examples. Life Esidimeni wouldn't have happened had there been enough facilities to safely move those patients to. It felt like there was a panic-stricken send them anywhere who will take them, because there just aren't enough beds, are there?
I think that question then may warrant us to just talk a little bit about the types of facilities that may be envisaged in the policy documents that we think all the Society of Psychiatrists also totally agree that we have good policy in place. But it's about the operationalization of that and the funding and the ring fencing perhaps of keeping budgets, money separate for mental health services, which are consciously integrated with other services. For example, the Mental Health Care Act talks about having to try and provide facilities in the least restrictive way. That puts general health facilities very much in the limelight and in the line of fire as such. So if there is a need for an assessment of a member of community, emergency type of scenario developed, the first port of call is, for example, the emergency department of a general hospital, not a psychiatric hospital, or in an attempt to decentralize the services, so, and also integrate with other general services. So if we just talk on that category of services, which will include from district hospitals through to regional and tertiary and the main central hospitals, which were traditionally the big academic hospitals of the different universities. So those would be the type of facilities which will then have a psychiatric unit, so to speak, where people could then be assessed. But an underbuilt of all of those specialist hospitals should have been a primary care system where there's a referral process of people who are being able to go to their local clinic or their community health center and systematically be referred up. At the same time, that will then require a category of workers on a primary care level of service, which are familiar and let's also say willing to work with mental health care and the problems on that level.
If you've just joined us late to the conversation, my guest in studio is Professor Bernard Jansen van Rensburg, who's the president of the South African Society of Psychiatrists. You're very welcome to ask a question of your own, or perhaps you'd like to comment on your own experience trying to access psychiatric care for yourself or for a family member. We're talking about some alarming figures about how many psychiatrists are available in South Africa. We haven't even yet got to the conversation about how many in the public sector. But what is the figure? Bernard, approximately how many psychiatrists are working in South Africa as we speak?
As we speak, I can confirm that we really have less than 700.
In the whole country?
In the whole country. And then for our own society's data, we'll have to break those down of even all the retired and life-honored members. So it's man and mouse and old and young. All of us together are less than 700. Further to qualify that some of our membership are also still in training, so-called associate members, which are doctors who are specializing in psychiatry. But the full members, which means qualified psychiatrist, will probably be in the vicinity of about 580. So the figure is to be qualified.
And of those, we know that a huge number are in private practice, not even in the public sector.
Correct. As much as two-thirds, we seem to see.
So of your 580... Yeah. 300 plus are going to be in private.
That is about
okay.
Correct. Yeah.
That's a very scary scary figure then, if you think of a family sitting with a mental health challenge who must go into the public sector. Where do they go? Where should you go? You've mentioned that if the system was functioning optimally, those primary healthcare places would be a place you could go to and know that even if they couldn't help you there, they would know where to send you.
Yeah.
How likely is that to happen in reality?
I think this is one of the challenges that is part of this discussion, and factors such a question as to what prevents people from having access to care. And it is basically, on the one hand, the provision of the services, but even before people reach services, I think we on that level may also have to battle with things still with stigma and with reluctance to speak up and self-acknowledge or acknowledge in one's family or support group that there may be reason to have to see a professional person like your family doctor even because you have started to see experiencing symptoms where it's depressive related, anxiety related, in the stressful scenarios that we all seem to be working these days. So there's also the barrier to overcome is that I don't need to do this. I don't need help. It's not that bad. And that type of scenario leads that it is all often delayed until a crisis seems to be needed. And that crisis then, whether it is somebody's unpredicted behavior or unexpected behavior, then seems to rush somebody to an emergency department. And the vicious cycle almost that we can't get our attention enough into prevention and promotional aspects of mental health care seems to be really a challenge on not just providing services, but also community that may need to make that decision to actually actively look for help.
You've just taken the words out of one of our listeners' mouths, because Anonymous WhatsApped me as you started that final comment there, saying depression and bipolar in particular are two conditions that are simply not believed. People think they can pray it away in this person's experience. Is half the battle is convincing people that these are not conditions to be taken lightly, that these are not conditions that you have to suffer in silence, that these are not conditions that carry shame of some kind and stigma. And then if you have won that quite uphill battle of getting through and making those connections, to then say to someone, come and look for help from a professional, for them to go and find no help, must be a dreadful outcome.
I think that a report like that is really taking us down. If we really have to get to the bottom of how deep this very, very long-standing, let's say, behavior that we have to remove so-called people who behave differently or abnormally. This person must be taken out of society and put somewhere else. That takes us back to the 18 and 17 and what hundreds, where we have had custodial care and people needed to put in a place and never to be seen again. And so there's been over time much work hopefully done to get from that model of care to community-based orientated care. But still, I think if we really look into that problem, the deep-seatedness of it is difficult to overcome.
Yeah.
And that if I get myself then identified as somebody who needs help, that means the separation out from my family or my community,
yeah,
or, you know, and having this mark somewhere that I'm somebody with perhaps a character problem or a weakness even. And those are things that people steer clear from or want to
stop them from seeking help. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about how much of the shortage of professionals in the mental health field is to do with how many we physically training. Here's a message from someone who said, my daughter did organizational honors and clinical psychology honors. They only take 8 in the Western Cape for masters in 1 year. And this is also related to who they will accept. Maybe they need to look at accepting more students in masters so that more psychologists can be accepted. Is that part of the problem, that we physically don't have the capacity or don't have the will to train more psychiatrists as well?
I would absolutely agree with that idea. I've actually had the opportunity to attend some of the Society of Psychologists of South Africa yesterday, and the same discussion was there. They have, in addition, also alluded to this so-called registered counselor group, which is not a registered clinical psychologist, but it's a different, lesser, perhaps, with least years of training, of a group of mental health care workers that could be used. And they were indicating that, you know, it does not make sense to have jobs and posts available for those categories. But then overall, coming back to the numbers that we are training, I think I will definitely, it's true for psychology, I think it's true for nursing, but it's definitely also true for psychiatry, where we are able to qualify about 35 to 40 psychiatrists every year between the 8 medical schools that we have across the country. But that is just not keeping up with the population growth. And in fact, that leads to a bit of a negative ratio at this point in time, because we've trained the same number for the past 15, 20 years. And we have not been able to increase our training capacity as well.
Several people asking about where to go for help. Anonymous saying, I'm convinced my husband is depressed, but he won't acknowledge it or go for help. So how do I help him?
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
That is a crucial question. Because it needs that measure of trust, I would say, but the self-acknowledgement that even a concerned family member may actually be having a point to tell me that I may need to reach out for help. It's true that is also often laid at the door of our male population, if I can say that. It's not an easy thing for our males to agree and acknowledge that, yes, perhaps that's actually applying to me. I'm actually should see this pattern happening. I think how we can actually succeed in that communication may have to do with the strength of our relationship with that person, the belief that there could be some benefit be obtained from speaking to somebody, and hopefully the person that they then do go and see will not let them down for some or other reason by not being available, or the clinic is too busy, or whatever the case. So we just then hope, after such a specific process of having to convince somebody, that that person is not discouraged once engaging with the system or with the health worker that's been involved.
I mean, it strikes me, sitting here listening to you, you know, imagine where we would be in our battle against gender-based violence if all the men who so clearly need help were getting access to help, able to look for it, knew where to go, and would find capacity to help them.
I think, again, on that point, it shows us how how multifactorial all of this is and how it actually is all integrated. I mean, even statistics like I've referred to the public health priority and how depression has moved up, but all of that is related with relationships, with interrelational violence or problems, even substance abuse, obviously, and many of our vehicle statistics, the accidents that we have, are also substance related. So, in many respects, there are many layers and many components that's actually on a social level integrated with what we will then also call mental health problems. So, different things coexisting together, co-occurring together, stresses on top of that, losses often. And then you've alluded to Prof. Moyosi's situation a few weeks ago, which I think from the medical fraternity, we were in conjunction with the South African Medical Association almost not hoping, but really trusting that some of the message that can come across as well is it is happening across the board. People are working with health and illness and mental health and mental illness are also prone to having symptoms and conditions and having to accept treatment. So that space of having openness and having the topic of mental health on the table and in the narrative and in our discussions, I think that we hope to achieve and gain on I think which has been a long-standing delay of not talking about.
Well, I hope this conversation is a step in that journey, and I hope it's one we can continue at another date. Professor Bernard Jans van Rensburg, President of the South African Society of Psychiatrists, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.